You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Healthcare in the United States has been through a lot of changes in recent years, with a growing arsenal of high-tech equipment, new prescription drugs, and big changes in the way we pay for healthcare, with the future of the Affordable Care Act still up in the air.
But underneath the technology, the medications, and the political debates, in the daily practice of medicine, there's a patient and there's a doctor. And our next guest says that communication between the two is the key to successful outcomes. She prescribes empathy, listening, and partnership to save money and to save lives.
Dr. Danielle Ofri joins us now. She's a physician at Bellevue Hospital in New York, associate professor of medicine at New York University's School of Medicine, and her latest book is What Patients Say, What Doctors Hear. Dr. Ofri, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So why is communication so important in our doctor's offices?
I think that most people can have had the experience of going to the doctor where you start to say what's on your mind, and the doctor interrupts on average in about 8 seconds. And once you're trying to say what you was going on, but you can't get the story out, immediately you're frustrated. But beyond frustration, I think this leads to medical errors, misdiagnosis, and increased costs.
And in your book, you advocate, one of your many solutions in the book, you advocate for the idea of the doctor piping down for a little bit, letting that patient open up with more time. What happens when the doctor does that?
Well, I think we fear that the patients will simply talk forever and will never get through the visit. That certainly was my fear. But I did the experiment myself after I saw some research suggesting that it wouldn't be quite so long. And the truth is most patients were done in, you know, less than a minute and a half, and they were able to tell their story, and they didn't feel cut off. Even my most verbose patient with the million and one complaints didn't talk for longer than 4 minutes.
And this, in a way, it sounds so basic, but in another way, it's revolutionary. You write about one medical facility that actually hired a chief listening officer. Are we seeing more and more people in healthcare trying to devote more attention to communication, to listening and paying attention?
We're starting to. I think we're just at the baby steps part of this process. I think partly, like, for example, chief listening officer in this case was for a hospital that was in distress. A unit had been closed down because of high mortality rates, patients were leaving, and so they hired this person, and what she did was so simple, yet, as you say, revolutionary. She sat and listened to the patients who could talk to her for hours about their experience, and she was able to figure out why the patients were so unhappy at the hospital, and the hospital was able to make changes, and now they're at the, you know, at the top of the charts in their field.
And this is what it comes down to, isn't it? I mean, listening and empathy, it may sound nice, maybe a bit squishy, but according to a lot of the research you've done and looked at, it actually leads to better health outcomes and lower costs.
Oh, yes, indeed. I mean, one experiment that I find so compelling for me, I'm a general internist, and every day half my patients come in with back pain. And I usually send them for physical therapy, and I think about all the exercises, massage, maybe the electrical stimulation machine. So this is a very cute experiment. Divided patients in half and gave half the electrical machine to relieve back pain and half a pretend machine. And actually, the patients on the pretend machine had about a 25% reduction in pain just from thinking they're getting a machine, but the machine itself gave them a 45% reduction in pain. But then half the physical therapists were silent and half spoke encouragingly, asked about their pain, how it affected their life. They were optimistic that they would get better. They were very empathic. And the patients who had just the engaged physical therapist and no machine at all had a 55% reduction in pain, more than the machine itself. And, of course, patients who had both the machine and the great physical therapist had a 77% reduction in pain. So just in that experiment, you can see that good communication by itself can improve patients' pain.
Yeah, you also referred to a study from as early as the 1960s. It was some kind of surgical recovery, and talking to the patients about pain and pain from recovery from that pain made a huge difference, got them out of the hospital sooner.
Yes, the patient, just an additional 20-minute discussion the night before surgery about pain and what to expect, how to help relieve it, how to get pain meds. These patients needed half the amount of narcotics, and they were discharged 3 days earlier. So that, as you can imagine, is a huge cost savings.
So that's pretty amazing. How do we train doctors have to learn a lot of stuff. How do we add this into the curriculum and the training to make the doctors' listeners good communicators in addition to being good at the health stuff?
Well, how we shouldn't do it is to make a PowerPoint presentation and give them a multiple choice exam on how to be good communicators. That's our usual approach. So I think this is the kind of thing you have to do in action. So having a small group of students with a supervising physician who is a good communicator, who can demonstrate how good communication works. So one thing I love to do when I get a new group of students is ask them, who's the worst patient on the ward? Because there's always a worst, and let's go talk to them. And almost always the quote, worst patient is the one who's refusing meds or wants to leave against medical advice or is being difficult. And, you know, in taking the time to talk to the patient, even just asking more about their background, who they are, what their big concerns are, I mean, it's not rocket science, but you can demonstrate to students how that very basic kind of conversation can help the patient feel less combative, I think less anxious, and often it can make the medical care much easier. So I think we have to teach it really in a very intense real-world setting and not with a slide presentation or a multiple-choice exam.
And even behind the scenes, you talk about doctor language sometimes, including phrases like this cancer patient failed chemotherapy, isn't compliant in following our recommendations for radiation or various forms of medication, changing it so that it's not a patient-blaming language.
Right. We say the patient failed chemotherapy. I mean, really, the chemotherapy failed the patient, right? So switching things around, that we don't look at the patient as the one, you know, who's to blame for this. We know the patient refused treatment. Well, maybe they declined for a good reason. And this, I think, changes our attitudes as physicians, but the patient on a more level ground with the doctor.
I want to flip things around now and look at this from the patient perspective. How can we, as patients going into that medical appointment, make sure we're communicating effectively with the doctor and that the doctor's hearing us?
Well, the first thing I think the patients as well as the doctors have to recognize that the doctor-patient conversation is the most important thing that happens in the exam room. And I think most of us view, a nice bedside manner, it's kind of an affable bonus for a few kindly physicians. But it really isn't. It's the critical ingredient of medical care. In fact, I think it's the single most important and most valuable diagnostic tool that we have. So the first thing is to recognize its importance and therefore to insist on it. So if your doctor isn't letting you talk, you can interrupt and say, hey, listen, I need another minute to get out my story. Just give me one more minute and then I'll let you get to your stuff. And if they really don't want to, do that, you can remind them that if they let you talk even for another minute or two, they'll be less likely to make medical errors and less likely to get sued. But if they really don't want to listen, then get a better doctor, because you can't be a good doctor without good communication skills. Doesn't exist.
A pratfall for patients that you talk about in the book that I am definitely guilty of, I call it kind of the Columbo effect. We're in the show Columbo, the detective, Peter Falk, would save his most important question for last, just as he's sort of walking out the door. And I've been there as a patient, and you've worked with a lot of patients who, here's my little thing. Here's the thing that, I don't know if it's a big deal, but it's the thing that I'm actually really deep down worried about. How, as a doctor, do you bring that out in a patient? How can we as patients make sure we lead with the big story?
Well, very often the big story is something that's very uncomfortable or embarrassing. So the patient I wrote about in the book was a young woman who came in with a scalp condition. It was very minor. And she complained about some various aches and pains, none of which showed anything on exam. So I said, listen, you're fine, a little bit of stress or whatever. See you later. And I finish, and she walks out the door. And then she's in the hallway, hands still on the doorknob, and she says, doctor, do you think all these parts hurt because that's where my boyfriend shot me with a dart gun? And I realized that I had missed domestic violence, that all the parts that were hurting her were parts that had been injured in a very serious situation. And it's not the kind of thing she felt comfortable bringing up. And thankfully, she had the strength and courage to hold on to that doorknob and let me know. And for me, the lesson was I need my antenna up. And I either didn't create the right atmosphere or I was just missing the boat. So I think patients may have to take the leap and just get it out there. Remember, if it's important to you, it's important to your doctor. But doctors have to be aware that there's often something else underneath and to ask, is there anything else I've forgotten?
How do you, as a doctor, try to create that comfort level so that, as you're doing the examination, as you're talking, that thing that maybe the patient's not sure they want to tell you, but it's so important that they can come up with that and tell you that?
So one thing I try to do is resist the urge to be typing on the computer from second one. And obviously, doctors have so many tasks to accomplish in not enough time. It's very hard not to do that. But if I try for the first minute to look right at the patient, not write anything on the computer, and just give them my full attention, and then maybe I'll say, I hope you don't, would it be okay if I use the computer to take notes on what you're saying so I don't miss anything? But taking the beginning part to really set the atmosphere of listening, listening hard, listening respectfully, I think gives us the best chance of having the patient feel comfortable revealing what's really on their mind.
One interesting thing you wrote about was sometimes when doctors give a bit of big news, bad news or good news, but then follow it up with a lot, sometimes that everything that came after the big reveal, the big bad or good news, the patient misses out on because they've focused on this one big thing, the diagnosis or whatever it might be. How do you make sure that all the information you present gets paid attention to?
Well, again, doctors, we need to be aware that once you say cancer or heart disease,
that's all
no one hears what comes. No one hears what comes next. So be aware that you have to work on that first. You must process that however long it takes before you get to the 20-step list of CAT scans and MRIs and, you know, consult visits and things like that. So to be aware of that, and then and make sure all the questions are answered for that. And then say we also have to talk about the plan. Now, maybe you need some time. You know, can we talk on the phone, or should we meet tomorrow to talk about the plan, or do you want to take 10 minutes, you know, to talk to your spouse, and then we'll talk about the plan, and then write the plan down. Because for sure, no one's going to remember the plan when they go home.
And I want to wrap up, Dr. Ofri, talking about a patient that you worked with, somebody who people might consider the worst patient. And she had high blood pressure, I think it was. And you kind of helped her come to the understanding that, as you understood it and as she should understand it, she's not her high blood pressure. She's her, and she's got problems, stress, and other things that go along with that that are part of the story.
Yeah, this was a lovely older woman, a widow, who was had very high blood pressure, and every medication she couldn't take. And this was our first time meeting. And whatever I offered, I've done that, I can't take it, this makes me sick, I can't do it. I began to get frustrated with her. But then at one point she said, I'm really sorry. And I didn't know what she was sorry about. I said, I'm sorry because I'm really not being a very good patient. And I looked at her, and finally dawned on me, I said, you're not a bad patient. You're a patient. You have hypertension, but you are not the hypertension. And we had to separate those out. I think she was so used to getting her doctors haranguing her for not taking her medications, not taking care of her salt levels, that she wasn't able to separate herself from the illness. And once we were able to put those on two different plates, there's her high blood pressure, and then there's her and her issues, it made it easier to deal with each thing as we had to get to it.
Dr. Ofri, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Rob. It's been a pleasure.
That was Dr. Danielle Ofri. She's an associate professor of medicine at the New York University School of Medicine, and her latest book is What Patients Say, What Doctors Hear.